What did you see?
I just came from the covered bridge and I sat there, and this is just like the water rolling over the rocks.
Mm.
It's continuously just
ever flowing.
Ever flowing.
That's similar to what I saw after the today. I was just seeing the water rolling over the rocks and continuing on down to where it's meant to go.
I had my eyes closed, and I think from what I have been looking at, there are images on my retina, but I could see a path, and I've been walking on a path all morning, or for an hour, and then when I moved my eye to the left, the path was there, but this was still there, and then when I looked to the right, and so I wasn't thinking about the music, and I couldn't tell you what you were playing at all, but I had three paths, and then this path again, and I was thinking, I wasn't thinking theologically or but it was just kind of beautiful. There were trees, and then there was a ball, sort of like fire, way in the distance on the path. And then I started to think, well, I wonder what we're supposed to be thinking of. And I thought, well, God's love is where we're learning and hearing things here this week that we'll take home with us. And then you start playing.
I was doing Memories by Water.
Memories by Water.
We had a very pleasant 3 days with old-time friends at their lake home in Wisconsin about a month ago. And the water, and walking up towards 10 Mile Falls yesterday, could hear water all the way. I was wondering if it was like a hum of an interstate about a mile away from us, and if the wind is blowing correctly, we can hear it at night. It's kind of like a white noise.
Mm.
And this was kind of like a white noise.
Mm.
And were we hearing rustling of the pine trees in the breeze, or was it the falls? When are we going to get there? Am I hearing them before I can see them? Some kind of water-related stuff and memories of things that I had with family, retreats, things. Usually by water.
Yeah.
It's amazing how mine was water too, up by that bridge today when I finally got into something more than getting here. And that you said was water up by that bridge. It didn't, your music didn't sound like it, but it did get me to that same river.
Hmm.
Thought of God's total natural creation of the environment around Homa Village, and how humans are such a little tiny insignificant spot in this whole creation, and yet he cares for us individually.
Mm. Mm.
I was drawn to think of a high school classmate that I've only seen once in the last 58 years. That I heard of recently having surgery yesterday, and thinking of him, and then wondering, why am I thinking of him instead of being present here?
It's where your mind goes, it's not what you're supposed to, kind of the words I told you, just go wherever your mind goes. Mine went to waterfall too, a little waterfall, and then the bear. For some reason, when I saw that bear, I could see the bear going by. I don't know what to do with that, but that's, I could just see it very distinctly, the bear going by, and then back to the water again. But to me, it was water too. It's interesting. Anybody else? Anybody have trouble imagining anything that there wasn't any? Nothing coming from it? Because that could be true also.
Mine was just a continuation of what I
just had a really powerful experience in the bookstore.
Oh.
It just came from that. And so it allowed me to kind of move more into that experience in the bookstore. It was just great being in the wonderful bookstore. But also, there was at least 5 books written by one of my roommates in seminary who's been writing for 30 years and who had been a deeply wounded, very deeply wounded, abused person. And to watch her in these last 30 years move into being such an amazing author and writer and healer of other people, it was very powerful for me to see. I mean, I have her books and they're all over, but to see them there again up here in Holden Village, 5 of her books, and knowing the deep, she converted, became a Christian while we were in roommates, and I went through that experience with her, and then went through watching her go through years attempting to heal from terrible abuse.
Ooh.
And then now knowing the joy that she has in her life, in her family, and her ability to write and share her own experience. So just to see her books was very
helpful. Yeah,
so yeah. And then in that bookstore, I found a book that just spoke to my son, who's trying to get into the entertainment industry, and it's called There's No Business Like Soul Business. And it's all about people in the entertainment industry and how they can survive. He's only 24 and feeling like, nobody will ever recognize my talent and my creativity. And here's this book saying, that's a myth. Just relax. This is what you need to do. This is how you need to work with this spiritually. Very powerful experience in the bookstore. So the meditation helped me kind of just think about those two people. Pray, I guess.
Well, the most profound statement that has kept coming back to me over the years, and I don't even remember when it was said, but this lady said, we were talking about imagination and how some people have trouble with imagination as far as dealing with God, and this lady just said, well, how else do we see God but through our imagination? And it was like, oh, the light went on, and every time I think of that, it's really freed me up to be an imaginative person and to trust whatever comes to me, and that's what's on our heart. You know, it's not on our mind so much as on our heart. And the story you're going to hear now is about hearts burning, and it's one you've heard before, but it's the story of the Watchwamis. Anybody who has not heard that story? No, it's a very... we're going to go through that, and then afterwards we'll have some questions, and then I've got some more creative, imaginative things to share with you if there's time. So, but this is taken from a book called, and this is, if you're interested, Taking Exercises to the World. The Spiritual Exercises of Ignatius Loyola is put together a handbook by Ellen Tomaszewski, Conducting Group Meetings of the Spiritual Exercises of Ignatius Loyola. If you're church or you want to get together with one or two people to go through something like this, this probably would be a good workbook for you, because it not only has this, but it has a CD that you can print out some of the materials. It has the appendix is almost a third of the book, so it has the talks in there, you know, if you wanted to go through, have one person be the presenter. It's really a wonderful resource. But that's just that's where this comes from. And this is from the fourth week of the exercises, when people are experiencing around April or May or even late March after the resurrection, after Easter. This would be a meditation that people would hear in the retreat if they're going through the retreat, which is where I come from, a 9-month retreat in daily life where you go through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. So here it is. In contemplation, we deepen our presence to the mysteries of Christ's life. using our senses and feelings to help us. As I read this contemplation, allow the image and the scene to soak into your being. See, hear, touch, smell, and be aware of your inner experience. Begin by breathing in slowly and out slowly. In and out. Relax. Allow your whole body to feel calm. Let the tension you feel from anything you've done here at Holden, activities, or any outside influence ooze out of your muscles, your arms, and your legs. Continue to breathe deeply, slowly, in through your nose and out through your mouth. Feel the warmth of the air as it goes in and out. Feel the chair under you, the floor beneath your feet, your clothing on your skin. Relax and breathe. Luke 24:15-35, paraphrased. It is Sunday, the day after Passover. All creation seems oblivious to the pain and death that Jesus experienced only 2 days ago. The sun shines, birds chirp, and the sweet flowery smell of olive blossoms perfumes the air. Visitors from out of town who came to celebrate the Passover with relatives prepare to return home. You are among them. You and Cleopas walk toward Emmaus, a small town about 7 miles from Jerusalem. You have been discussing the events of the past week. How could the chief priests and the Pharisees do such a thing? You ask. Jesus did so much good. Why hadn't we both seen him cure those lepers? Remember the guy with the withered hand? And he even raised Lazarus from the dead. And his teachings were so authoritative. I guess I relied on him. I was sure he was the Messiah. I even sold my house to follow him. Now what do I do? I'm not sure. I believe what Mary Magdalene says, that he's alive. Perhaps she was imagining what she wished would happen. Your companion, Cleopas, answers, I too had hoped he would lead our people to victory. Where is the kingdom he promised? Last week, before all this happened, I thought I understood who Jesus was, but now, I don't know. You walk on and on. The road winds through olive groves and down a small hill. Sunshine weaves a pattern of dark and light on the path. Mud splashes your sandals as you try to jump a small spring running down the path. Just then, a man catches up with you from behind. He says, "What are you discussing as you walk along?" You both stop short. In disbelief, you wonder how he could have missed the crucifixion. Cleopas says, "You must be the only person in Jerusalem who doesn't know what things have happened there in the last few days." "What things?" he asked. "Jesus of Nazareth proved he was a great prophet by the things he said and did, but our chief priests and leaders had him crucified. Our own hope had been that he would be the one to set Israel free." You answer, "But before we left, two women from our group went to the tomb in the early morning. And instead of the body, they said they saw a vision of angels who declared he was alive. Some of our friends went to the tomb and found Jesus' shroud, but they saw nothing of Jesus or an angel." The man replies, "Wasn't it written that the Christ would suffer and so enter into his glory? Then, starting with Moses and going through the prophets, he explains the passages throughout the scriptures that are about Jesus. You listen with rapt attention. When you draw near to Emmaus, the man seems to be going on. For some reason, you want long to spend more time with this man. His words burn within you, just as those from the Master. You say, 'It is nearly evening. Won't you please stay with us?' He accepts your invitation. And while he is with you at the table, he takes the bread and says the blessing. Then he breaks the bread and hands it to you and Cleopas. Suddenly you recognize him. It's Jesus. Joyfully you reach out to embrace him. 'My Lord,' you exclaim, but at that moment he vanishes. You turn to Cleopas. 'My heart burned within me when he explained the scriptures to us. Why didn't we recognize him? We have to get back to tell the others that we too have seen Jesus alive.' You and Cleopas jump up and run much of the 7 miles back to Jerusalem, right to the Passover celebration room where the 11 apostles and their companions are gathered. Andrew opens the door, grabs you both in an embrace and yells, 'It's true! The Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon.' Then you and Cleopas excitedly tell your story of what happened on the road and how you recognized him at the breaking of the bread." What struck you about that experience? Anything?
Casual conversation. Oof, there's nothing.
Casual conversation, and all of a sudden, aha.
And sometimes it's hard to imagine that happening. But they were there, and we know it from history that it happened. I don't feel poof.
I was thinking of the experience of those two fellows, and all of a sudden they recognize Jesus in the midst.
Mm-hmm. I had a strange feeling that I hadn't seen Jesus in his life, and was walking on that road, but I had no way to recognize him.
I was with you.
And then I fell asleep and dreamed a little bit.
Why did you just not?
Yeah.
Oh. Because you did walk on the road to Emmaus, you did.
Yeah, but I didn't see Jesus.
No, well.
Except in my epiphany.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
No, okay.
It was just a little white, not even a white spot in the road. It's a traditional spot where this took place.
Yeah.
It was just, a guide knew where to take us, kind of, but no signs on the boat.
If that would happen today, how would we react?
Oh yeah. Well, it was going
well he wouldn't look like Solomon's Christ, and we wouldn't recognize him. I mean, we have images of Jesus. How would we recognize Jesus? He'd have black hair. He'd probably darker skin. And probably
we don't have an image, do we?
We have an image, but it's how do we know?
Well, he'd come to our church and tell us it.
Maybe do some miracles.
I had a teacher that said when we were talking about this, if Jesus were here today, where would we find him? And the teacher said, probably with youth on the river with a cake. With a keg of beer.
No.
The question, though, is, you know, what struck you from experiencing the story this way in a different way, maybe than just hearing it?
Well, it's like, tell me the old story, and just can't hear it too often. It's in my bones. Whether or not I say words out loud, practically every time I eat, I think of this story.
Mm.
Be known to me in the breaking of the bread.
Luke, that's in Luke, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any description in Luke that's as close to sacramental as this one?
I don't think so.
Breaking of the bread.
Well, the fish, I think, is. Well, I think that's in John. I'm not sure. Did you find yourself completing the story first before it was over, or were you able to hold yourself within as the story progressed?
Both ends.
Well, I thought
I
know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that was, I guess, what I was trying to say. We know what the story is, and it's kind of hard to stay with it.
Yeah. Word, you're getting at it here. This is a, you know, it's a way of praying to slow yourself down so that you can actually move with those people on the road. You know, there's a point where they. You know, the disappointment is so much. I mean, we expected this person to be this way, all those things, and they were just dumbfounded. And then all of a sudden to recognize him. It's like going back from Heart Lake looking at the dirt, you know, because you're tired. They were dejected. They probably weren't looking up. But more, any other? How did you feel when it came to the point where the story was he was breaking bread, and they recognized him, and then he disappeared. Is there any?
To me, that would be frightening or shocking. Or
frightening and shocking.
And disappointing.
And disappointing.
Why didn't you stay around? Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah.
I guess I wondered, why did Luke tell us that story? There's not any place else in the gospel. What is he trying to tell us? Why include it?
If you were one of those two people, and how was told, what would you experience? You know, as you went through the story, if you can hold the end of the story. I think that's interesting that we think of the story completely and come to the end before we experience it. And yet, you know, so much of church is that particular problem, that it's not new anymore, that we can't just experience each story step by step and say, you know, and what does this story, as Dick was saying, what does this story talk about? What is it?
We talk about seeing Jesus in the face and life of other people. And once in a while we do, and then it's sort of like that. You discover Jesus. Most of the time maybe we don't, I don't, but sometimes. And then that's an experience.
Did you say most of the time you don't recognize?
I don't. And when I look around and see 100 people in a day, I probably won't see Jesus. But once in a while, there's someone that's very special and I suppose Christ-like, or for some reason, I think, well, Jesus comes to us through other people.
If there hadn't been two, but just one, the story probably would not have gone on.
Mm-hmm. Right. And where do we recognize Jesus today? Mm-hmm.
I think this story is a reminder for me always of Christ's attempt to intervene all the time in our lives, and how easy it is to miss that. So what I did is I was taking it to a place where I'm concerned and feel fear as I enter back into my world in September, and recognizing that I need to keep really open to the presence of Christ in that place of disappointment or discouragement, and face it, recognizing Christ is there. I just need to have the eyes to see. So that's kind of what the meditation took me, was to my place of discouragement, and praying that I can have those eyes to see Christ. Because I believe, and I've had so many times where I sense that intervention of Christ in my life, in those kind of places. So it was just a reminder that that's there, always there.
And yet, it's so much, you know, hindsight, right?
Yes, sometimes,
Our hearts were burning within us, we didn't get it until later.
I think
that's the way I often think about this story, well, for all the Gospels, is that the way that they're written, they know we know the end of the story, you know? Like, of course we know the end of the story. And so we are always feeling compelled to add that missing piece of the resurrection and the new life of Christ. And so even the way the Gospels are written are designed to make us remember, you know? Every step of the way where we're going, but that's not the end of the story. Even in the midst of their despair, we're already thinking ahead with the disciples. No, keep on walking, you know, don't stop. And in a way, that's sort of our reminder in our own lives about, no, this isn't the end of the story. Keep up, you know, it gets better.
Tony Campolo spoke to our synod recently, and his sermon was in the accent of a black preacher in the South. And he was preaching, and he was repeating, saying, "This is Good Friday, but Sunday is coming."
That's how I remember that.
Yeah. Love it. Love
that part of
history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if you were a new Christian and heard this story? how would you react? Or is this the way Christians, new Christian, would finally accept Jesus? I'm just throwing that out.
Mm-hmm. Good question.
If it's a new Christian, they have experienced the story. Wouldn't that? I mean, if they are.
They would experience, yeah, they would
they
have
already
experienced the resurrection.
Yeah, or experienced mm-hmm. Christ in their lives.
I mean, okay.
Would they? How would they respond? It's really hard to say, because every new Christian is experiencing things a little different. Just like you have different, you know, the prior experience of your imagination and the differences of what people imagined in their mind. The bridge is to say, as you heard this story, what was going on visually in your mind? There may not be much going on. Maybe it's thinking, you know. Rather than seeing visually, that's kind of the question. And one of the things that another question says is where are some of the places in your life where you miss seeing Jesus? Where are some of the places in your life where you miss seeing Jesus?
Well, it's like that old Footprints in the Sand poem. It's easier to look back and see.
Yeah.
There he was. I didn't know it at the time. Mm-hmm. I had an experience like that when I prayed about Amour. And I can remember talking to a kind of a spiritual mentor leader. I went ahead and moved. You know, I was praying, "Dear God, tell me what to do. No. Give me some sign." Well, I didn't. and he told me, this fellow told me that you suppose the answer to that prayer was make up your mind.
Nick's wife was in the kitchen packing the dishes. Well, this was strange for me today. It didn't work for me today. It's not your fault. But I used to do hypnosis sometimes. And of course, you start with breathing deeply
and then you fall asleep.
You feel the seat relief, you feel you're going down. Pretty soon, you're kind of out of it. And that's what happened to me. It might have been trance rather than sleep. But it was very relaxing. But
that's all right.
I couldn't relate. To a mass strain.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'll think about it.
That's your experience, Joe, and that's fine. That's what I'm asking for. Sometimes we say kind of again what the presenter wants to hear or anything that doesn't matter to me. But let me propose that an Emmaus walk could be right after 9/11, where you know how did this happen? Why did this have to happen? Any tragedy. This could be anything that leaves us hopeless and discouraged. And who is it that comes and walks beside us? Or do we remember that Jesus comes in those moments and walks with us? And then explains the entire scripture and how he fits in. And what does that mean? Again, I won't give you the answer, but I mean that... What gives us hope in those times when we experience this great disappointment and death of, or being concerned about a friend, you know, going through an operation? I think those are the times we miss seeing Jesus until kind of we can see a little more clearly.
And when people start asking why, we really don't know why, and even if they're... There's a reason we can't know it, and we sometimes can help people if they're asking, why did God let this happen?
We can
say, well, God doesn't determine things like that, but certainly God is walking with us now, helping us no matter what we go through.
Yeah. But we shout out, don't you know? Don't you know what happened in New York City today? You know, kind of a thing. It's like... Or don't you know what's happening when people are starving to death? You know, we kind of cry out to God and say, and then we say it, we pray it. You know, the story about prayer, deep prayer here of crying out. And then finally, we sense that God is listening. You know, all the psalms that are in the scripture, they're always crying out to God, well, where are you? And finally saying, oh, yes, you are there. Can you stay a little bit longer?
It's evening.
The day is over.
Stay with us.
And at the other end of the spectrum, don't we also miss seeing him during the good times and fail to give thanks for good things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm caught with, I think I heard in your story that at the end, the person attempted to embrace Jesus, at which point he disappeared.
Yeah.
So, what did the embrace do that made Jesus disappear? Getting too close to him? But I'm just caught up with that one again.
Remember Mary? Well, you know, Jesus says, don't touch me, don't hang on to me. I'm going to my Father. There's a repeat there. Jesus that comes through walls, resurrected to the disciples. Different.
Well, it refers back to yesterday, the Our Father versus My Father, you know? When we try to claim Jesus as our own private property, we don't get to do that. That's not the deal. Mm-hmm. And the disciples in running, Cleopas and us in the story, running back to the 12, that's where we get to see him again. You know?
Seems like if you grasp him, then that lack of, you lost your vulnerability then. And you lost your ability to have means for faith. There has to be the risk. And if he's contained, you know, in the embrace, then there is no risk.
Mm-hmm.
There is no faith.
Yeah.
We are no longer vulnerable.
Yeah, right.
It seems to me the vulnerability is where most powerful faith experiences occur. When we are frightened, when we are discouraged, when we are seeking and struggling, it's where we most often, most powerfully meet God. So if we can confine God or confine Christ, we're not going to experience it.
And where did the real burning happen for them? Where, in burning in their hearts. It's interesting. Where did that happen?
Just on the road.
Yeah. It wasn't that they were... You know, when they reached out and they recognized him, that was enough to have them run 7 miles back. And I was thinking they probably ran in the middle of the night because it's evening. They were running at night back to Jerusalem. They were filled with excitement and joy. It wasn't a disappointment that he disappeared. This was the divinity, actually, of Christ showing, you know, really the humanity and the divinity in this story.
This disappearance of Jesus possibly could not have been instantaneous or miraculous. It could have been that they just didn't see where he was for a moment. They inattention and he went away and then they saw him. I mean, that isn't necessarily a miracle that Jesus suddenly was there and suddenly disappeared like magic, but maybe it is. But I don't know if that needs to be that important a part in the story, except that they recognized him.
Mm-hmm.
And that would just add to the value of it if it did happen that way. But,
you know, something that is interesting I do with the people at the home is I say, okay, let's have him not disappear and let's continue the story. So I challenge you to finish the story if he didn't disappear.
Mm-hmm. We marched with them and then they ate again together.
They'd be eating together, be more talk, and what else?
Is it kind of like acting out the Great Commission? I'm out of here. You keep on going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's part of the message of the story. That, you know, I mean, if, and here's another thing. If we can imagine our pastors in our churches as Jesus for a moment when that bread is broken and wine poured. And then if we can just see them again as pastors, see Jesus for a moment, that Jesus is in that giving out of the bread and the wine. And we could really, really, that it could come to our hearts and minds and souls. What a difference that would make.
And that's a great inspiration for people who are assisting and serving communion to feel that they're...
Well, the classic interpretation of this text is it's the story of the earliest form of Christian worship, that it's not so much a walk, it's a worship service, so that we come burdened and troubled, and we gather, and there we hear the word and the psalms and the prophets, and then we share a meal where we see Christ, and then we're sent into the world to proclaim the good news.
Yeah.
So in a way, every Sunday is the Emmaus walk.
Yeah, good. Very good. Isn't that what brings us back? To gather with the people?
I hope so.
I hope so too. Just a little tidbit here about imagination and how can we... So how, this is Herbert Brokering. He got his inspiration from dogs, and this is called Dog Psalms. And I wanted to share this. And just this today, I was standing out right by the dining hall, and there's a black dog out there. You probably have seen the dog. And the dog, I had this pumpkin bread in my hand, and the dog at first came up and, you know, was looking and begging. And there's a little girl, and she says, "Now don't give him any of that, you know." And of course, the bread was so crumbly that it's going to fall. And of course, the little crumbs fell. He got some.
Even the dogs get the crumbs.
Yeah, even the dogs get the crumbs. But I thought, this fellow is inspired by dogs because of their personality and how it reminds him of God. And he has on one side, he says, "I am dog." And the other side says, God. His prayer. This one's called, "I wait. I am dog. I am patient. I can be taught to wait. I do not prefer to wait in a long line. I want to be the only dog waiting. If you are coming, I will wait, breathing deeply, half dreaming, wholly wishing. When I know you love me, I live for you with every breath. I bury my yearning deep inside and hide it in my sleeplessness. I toss and turn and wait until you are here. I wait for you, sometimes while singing, sometimes while whimpering, howling, wanting with all my heart. I can wait loud or soft. I can wait through long night watches. I will wait without end, knowing I am wanted. I am dog. Willing, patient, waiting prepares me for your presence." Herb's prayer. "God, you have given me the gift of waiting. Like a child, I wait with my whole body, mind, and soul. I wait for seasons. They go. I wait for another. It comes. I wait for days to dawn, nights to darken, seeds to break open, fruit to fall. As I wait, I learn the gift of patience and the joy of surprise. While I wait, I find myself in your presence. I wait for you, and in waiting, I see you are here, waiting." Herb is about 85 years old now, I think, 85, 86 years old. He still speaks, and he was in Seattle a while back. He's got another book like this called Cat's Psalms. And I want to read one more, because it's the one that I read to the residents recently. It's called "I Snuggle." "I am dog. I snuggle. I get close. I snuggle into your body, under your arms, into your lap, between your feet. I snuggle in your bed, into your eyes, into your presence. I snuggle into your voice, into your favorite chair, behind your pillow, beneath your book. I wrap myself around your heart. I am created to be close to you, with you, of you. I can snuggle so we are like one. When I move, you move. I sleep, then you sleep. You wake, then I wake. You stretch, I stretch. I snuggle to stay near when we are apart. You are more near than far. I feel your snuggle when you are away. I am absolutely loved. God. God, I snuggle. I get close. Stay near. Get deep into your presence. I look for your words that make me safe. Keep me close. Love me. I look for your heart in all words and stories. I want your presence wrapped around me. You show me your way, and I want to walk that way. When I see how far the universe is spread, I want to be close. I want to be under your arms, in your hands, and at your feet. You are more near than far. Imagination. Where did that happen, huh? So I think in closing here, a couple minutes, any other burning questions?
Share something that's on the cover of my wife's notebook. Dogs come when they're called. Cats take a message and get back to you.
Isn't that great?
And if we're imagining God and dog together, God comes when they're called, or God comes when he's called.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think another thing about this whole story is that, as Katie was saying, this is worship. If we can bring that story into some new light, of seeing that seeing our folks when they come to church, looking around you, knowing that, you know, some are struggling with death or with, you know, a diagnosis for themselves. You know, we're all not all the same. Some are, you know, in a good mood and things are going pretty well. But to be aware that this service is what really helps us. And this ritual helps us get through everything in our life. Mm-hmm. The bread, the wine. So
both their sorrows were helped and their joy made more complete by sharing.
You know?
They didn't walk alone away from Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. The first thing they did when they found out was they ran back to tell the others.
So, let's see, we're at the end officially of this time together. Just one. If I have a little bit of reading here that I need to read in my outline. The river of life is free. That sounds good. The river of life is free. From How Big Is Your God? Jesuit priest who was born in India and has written this wonderful little book, which are Spiritual Direction Community is a little bit of reading from this essay. Carl Jung believed that the spring of life, giving water, now flows in what he calls our shadow. That dark side of our personality that surprises us at times. Our shadow is made of the repressed aspects of our conscious self and the things the conscious person does not wish to accept within him or herself. For instance, someone who identifies with being generous has a shadow that is stingy or selfish. Jung believed that the spring of life-giving water is more readily found in our shadow than in our limiting ego. No one thinks of building a shrine at these times when our shadow reigns, and so the water that spring up there remains free and happy. It is here that we more easily experience the presence of the divine. Remember, the demons always recognized who Jesus was before the religious folks of his time did. And religion can sometimes become an obstacle to experiencing the river of life and relating with the divine. Consider this story. There was once a religious man. One day he heard the voice of God in his prayer, inviting him to come to a certain mountain where he would be able to see the face of God, the face of the divine, and experience God's loving embrace. The man came out of his prayer and could not contain himself. He thought of this day when he would see God face to face, and he just could not wait. But then he thought to himself, I have to offer God something in return for such a wonderful gift and to commemorate this once-in-a-lifetime occasion. He thought of gold, silver, precious stones, but nothing in the material world seemed to suffice. Finally, he decided to fill a jar with tiny pebbles. Each one of these pebbles would represent one of his prayers, sacrifices, or good works. When the jar was finally full of his little pebbles, he ran up the mountain, got to the top, and his heart was ready to explode in anticipation, but to his surprise, he could not see or feel anything divine. He began to think that he was deluded, a victim of a divine prank. Holding his jar, he broke down and began to weep. Just then, he heard God's voice once again saying, I am waiting to show myself to you and wanting so much to take you into my loving arms, but you have put an obstacle between us. If you want to see my divine face and experience my love, break the jar. The divine gifts cannot be earned. If we truly believe with Paul that we are children of God and therefore heirs of the divine, then the gifts of God are not our privilege, but our right. So, go with God. Recognize him when you can, when the Spirit works. And I'll stay around if you have anything. We're officially done. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.